Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Now, I got to laugh. You know, all the modern-day coaches have worked so hard to be gentler, to be kinder, and more compassionate with our athletes these days. How we've all worked so hard to get away and to evolve from the old school Vince Lombardi, Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick, Bobby Knight form of coaching, where coaches coach through hardcore, in-your-face, no-nonsense intimidation, where winning is the only thing and coaches don't want to be your friend or your kid's friend. Remember those days? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. We're hearkening back to Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler, where coaches coached and kids just do what they were told. But what if I told you that a new study out of a top business school reveals that coaches who yell and scream at halftime, well, it actually turns out to be more effective than just going out and singing a team's praises. That is, coaches who vent on their players at halftimes of games often get better results from that team in the second half of the contest. Yeah, now it sounds hard to believe, but you have to listen to this account. And by the way, my thanks to our Sports Edge friend Steve Callis for bringing this study to my attention. But let me read this, and if you would, just pay attention because you'll get the gist of this very, very quickly. And by the way, friends, I'm going to ask for phone calls on this to get your reactions, whether you're surprised, whether this makes sense to you, whether this is the way it should be. I don't know. 1-877-337-6666, of course, is our number. Okay, here we go. A new study finds that anger is actually more effective during halftime speeches than inspiration. Researchers at the University of California, Berkeley's Haas School of Business, that's a top business school, they analyzed hundreds of halftime speeches and final scores from high school and college basketball games and found that players seemed to perform better after a harsh, more negative halftime speech from their coach. In fact, researchers discovered a significant relationship between the level of negativity that a coach projects during a halftime speech and second half scoring outcomes. In other words, the more negativity, the more the team outscored their opponents. That is, at least up to a certain threshold point. Quote, this was even true if the team was already ahead at halftime, said the lead researcher and Haas professor emeritus Barry Stahl. He said, rather than coaches saying, well, you're doing great, just keep it up, it's actually better to say, I don't care if you're up by 10 points, you can play better than this. Now, the research team started gathering information by contacting more than 50 high school and college basketball coaches in Northern California, and they asked if they could record their halftime locker room speeches for the purpose of the study. In all, 304 speeches from 23 different teams were used. Each halftime pep talk was rated to the extent the coaches expressed several different emotions, from positive, like pleased, relaxed, inspired, excited, to negative, like disgusted, angry, frustrated, and so forth. The research indicated that while negative halftime speeches led to higher scores in the second half, There is, of course, a point where it's reached where all that negativity begins to bring the team down. In other words, when coaches displayed extreme bouts of anger and frustration, that actually ended up hurting their players' performances in the second half. So it's clear from the researchers' findings that negativity up to a certain point will help players perform, but if you give them too much negativity, well, that's going to actually be detrimental. So the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, the researcher, Barry Stahl, said, well, you got to be careful. You can get in the guys, your team's face at halftime and tell them how you really feel about their performance and push them through some negative comments. The problem is, if you go too far overboard, it's going to backfire on you. And he does obviously conclude by saying, our study does not give coaches a license to be a jerk. Well, of course, we know that. By the way, this study, it was published in the Journal of Applied Psychology, so it's fairly legitimate. So what do you think about this? I mean, all coaches obviously raise their voices at certain times of the season with their troops, and I get all that. This is actually saying it's actually beneficial and will improve your team's performance in the second half, in this case of high school or college basketball games, if you vent on them at halftime up to a certain point. Now, the problem with the study, from my perspective, is it doesn't tell you how far you can go with this. At what point do you cross the line? That, to me, would be sort of the critical element in this, and maybe that's room for the next study. But let's talk about this. Do you think that, first of all, this study makes sense, that venting on your kids at halftime will improve their performance in the second half? Or do you feel that kids today have become, for lack of a better term, too soft to handle this kind of in-your-face treatment from a coach? Or do you fear that parents will be basically demanding an apology because the coach raised his or her voice during halftime? 1-877-337-6666. Interesting concept. Let's start our conversation on this Labor Day weekend with our friend Ed Ward over in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Ed, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Ed?
Good. Well, I've been in a few situations where halftime, when our teams have been down. I was an assistant coach at Montclair State, and I coached with a legendary coach, Ted Fiore. Now,
yes.
In practice, he was demanding. But in halftime, there were some games where we were getting blown out and all that stuff. He never really raised his voice. He would just say, hey, if we're going to win this game, this is what we got to do. If not, it could be a long evening. And there were, out of that talk, we there were many times we'd come back and win the game or come back and stay in the game, and if we lost, we lost on that. But it seems like today, I call it the milk and cookies coach theory. You know, you got to be nice to everyone.
Yes.
That's not what coaching's all about in my mind, okay? There are times you got to be demanding, without a doubt, especially if your team's constantly making same mistakes and all that stuff. But, you know, first off, the locker room should be a sacred area. That should not go out to mommy and daddy and tell them what's going on. That's between the team and what's going on. And that's what a lot of the problems are. Parents are asking, well, what did the coach say and all that stuff? And then if something is said, well, then right away they want to go to the administrator or whatever on that.
Right.
On that.
So, Ed, I know you're taking some of an old-school approach here, and that's what I'm saying, that maybe what this study is suggesting, in fact, that they're concluding that the old-school approach of coaches having the license to raise their voice at halftime, well, that's going to work. And it may not make the kids happy or make the kids' parents happy, but if you want to win, that's going to turn the tide. It's a curious sort of throwback, as you say, as opposed to the milk and cookies approach today, where coaches are expected to make everybody a pat on the back and make sure everybody's leaves halftime with a smile on their face. It's a little different kind of approach.
Well, the one thing I'll say is this: if you're a constant screamer and all that stuff, and you know, I was demanding. There were times I would scream and all that stuff. You could, at some point, your team is tuning you out, and I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
And I even had to make some adjustments on that. Because they do tune you out when it comes to if it's constant badgering and all that stuff.
Ed, I couldn't agree more. And as always, my thanks for the call.
Have a great day, Rick. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend.
You bet. Thanks, Ed. And to Ed's point, and I think that's important to reiterate, coaches who do yell and scream, and they sort of say, well, that's my personality, that's how I approach my job, kids will tune you out very quickly. If you are always at a very high level of coaching in terms of yelling and screaming, a lot of decibels, kids just tune you out. It only becomes effective when you pick and choose your moments. And that study doesn't really say that, but I can sort of extrapolate from that. The coaches who pick and choose their times to really show their disappointment or anger with the team's performance, even if they're up by 10 points in a high school basketball or a college basketball game, that's when the kids do respond. Let's move on. Let's go to Louie over in Long Beach. Louie, good morning. You're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good, Louie.
I'd just like to make a comment. I coach soccer in college as well as high school lacrosse, and I found out that it's not really the yelling that's potent when you do things. It's the corrections you're making at halftime.
Yep.
Because now you're seeing what the team did the first part of the game. What's important is that you make those corrections, and those selective corrections, like the best players, you have to watch out for the certain players. You have to watch out for the fast players. I think those kind of corrections, they blend in. And then when you joke a little bit, like you could say, we can't even kick the ball into the ocean. We got big problems. You know, when you bring light to the situation, the kids respond even more to that. They know that you're on their side, that you're not against them. Because what happens is, if you spend too much time yelling and screaming at them, they can't hear you after the first or second word.
Right.
They completely put you out, okay? So it's important to be firm, yet use your voice in the proper way. No cursing, because once you start cursing, they listen to the curse word. They don't listen to your corrections.
Louie, these are good observations, and I agree with you. Thank you for your comments this morning, Lou. Appreciate it. But to Lou's point, this is the essence of coaching. You have to know to communicate. And yes, as Lou said, it's okay to vent your spleen and to get angry with your team at halftime, but you have to walk a very fine line, especially with today's athletes, because they can turn on you in an instant. And yes, too much screaming, too much profanity, that's going to upset the apple cart and turn them against you. Learning how to basically use a little humor or a smile on your face to make them know that you're on their side and you're rooting for them, that's critically important. And, of course, you can never sort of pinpoint one individual. That is, it's fine to scream and yell at your team. As a team, you can make your points. But when you start pinpointing individual players and singling them out for mental mistakes or not executing properly or whatever it might be, that's when you really sort of turn the whole thing in the wrong direction. Because athletes are very, very sensitive, and always have been, quite frankly, if the coach starts to pick on individual players. You got to be very careful of that for sure. All right, we're talking about this new study. It says you can. It's beneficial for coaches to basically vent their anger, vent their spleen at halftime in order to get the team to play better in the second half. And the study out of the Berkeley Business School in California says that actually works. Up to a certain level. And we're taking your calls at 1-877-337-6666. Let me take a timeout. Pete McCarthy has your sports update. When I return, I'll go right back to your calls and comments. Stay with me. And back here on the Sports Edge, we're discussing a new business school study that says that, yes, when coaches raise their voices at their players at halftime, they often get the team to play better in the second half. And we're talking about this old school approach and how it actually gets results up to a certain limit at 1-877-337-6666. And again, the part of the study, which I think is a critical part, which I didn't go into detail, they didn't have results on. Okay, fine. The coach can yell and scream at his kids to get them to play better and to basically voice the coach's displeasure at their performance so far. But it doesn't say at what point that becomes counterproductive. And I think that's sort of an important part of this equation. So in other words, not really giving coaches a license to go scream and yell at their kids constantly at halftime, but at some point it turns on them, and that, I'd like to know what that point is. Okay, let's get back to our calls. Let's go to Mary at Long Island. Mary, good morning. You're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, and thank you again for such an interesting topic.
Well, thank you, Mary.
I'm just curious as to what really goes on in certain locker rooms during halftime. For example, I don't think Bill Belichick is screaming his lungs out, but he has a demeanor and he expects from his members of his team. And it just seems it's not just, you know, yelling, but it's setting expectations the way parents do with their children. You know, I won't tolerate this kind of behavior with a tone in your voice that shows you mean it rather than, oh, please don't do that. That's not nice.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at a certain age. You know, mm-hmm. with a two-year-old, you don't act like that as a parent. But it's interesting. I think people do coddle their kids too much today.
Well, Mary, I will tell you this, and thank you for your call. I have never been in a locker room where Bill Belichick has been running the team, but I've been in enough locker rooms where I have been surrounded by coaches who do yell and scream. And as a former college coach myself, I have picked and chosen moments where I do raise my voice. But again, as I said before the break, there's a real sort of strategy to all this, where you really want to basically send out perhaps a wake-up call to your team. You want to make sure they are performing at a high level. I was always very careful when I coached not to pick on individual players. That's not the purpose. It's to get the team to sort of wake up and understand they're not doing what they should be doing. The other team is obviously planning during their halftime session to play better and to really have that kind of impact. And I can see from that perspective how this study could have some great merit to it. But again, in this day and age, coaches have to be very, very careful how they go about trying to motivate their kids. Let's move on. Let's go to Jeff in Long Beach. Hey, Jeff, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Good, Jeff.
This is a very interesting study because I believe that the children, you know, or athletes need to be told what to do, what they're doing is wrong, but in a disciplined but, you know, kind way.
Yes.
In halftime when they're down, especially, but it also depends on the coach. I mean, you have to know that coach has that locker room, because once you lose that locker room and the coach, no one respects the coach, then they could do whatever they want and it won't yield any results. And about picking on players in junior varsity football, I was picked on,
mm-hmm.
and it just wasn't right. I mean, this wasn't halftime, but, you know, I got injured the game, one game, and then I told the coach that my back was hurt. And then the next game, while traveling on the bus, he told me that I would be the water boy, trying to carry those, like, six, you know, water things. So, like, I was totally lost, and I quit football after that. But
Jeff, that's
it depends.
Yeah, that's it really makes a big difference. And again, that you're unfortunately had lived this where you were picked upon by the coach and obviously, you know, ostracized. Jeff, thank you for the call this morning. Look, there's a whole sort of coaching strategy that goes into this. Obviously, in the course of a game, the coach is well known to the players. The coach has to know exactly what he or she wants to say, wants to express to their players, and how to do it. As Jeff just pointed out, if a coach picks on an individual player, that's going to have all sorts of negative consequences. You don't necessarily have to coddle your team, but you got, as I said before, you got to pick and choose very carefully how you do this, because as even the study acknowledges, if you go too far overboard, screaming and yelling, eventually it becomes has negative consequences. It's counterproductive. But I do have to say there's some merit here to just knowing how to get the team to respond, to wake up, to realize that they may be up by 10 points at the half at a basketball game, but they could easily lose that lead if they don't sort of step up and push themselves more in the second half. There is merit to that. And I think parents today have to understand, you have to give the coaches a certain amount of leeway to basically wake up their kids, to get them to play at a higher level, And it may involve some, as I said, raising their voices. It's as simple as that. Let's go to our friend Jack Smithlin over in Fairlawn. Coach, what do you think about that? Did you raise your voice at all when you were coaching?
Well, Rick, when I first started coaching in the 70s, I was kind of, a loud coach. I would yell and scream, but like most great coaches or good coaches today, and I'm not saying I was a great coach, but I would never, ever reprimand a kid one-on-one. You know, there's a big difference between being angry, being mad, and being passionate.
Yeah.
And, a lot of the kids have to understand that inner coach. Is he being passionate? Is he want the best for us? Does he need us to understand things? And one of your callers said it before, and he hit it right on the head. What sports teach our kids are all those life lessons. And what you have to try to do as a coach is earn respect and trust from your kids. Because if you do, if you earn that trust and respect, no matter what you do, you'll get through to most of them. You know what? And the yelling and screaming, I think this study that you read, I just don't see it. I really don't see it. I think that if they did a bigger range, if they went throughout the United States or whatever, they'd find, because every study that I've ever read says that that's not the way to coach anymore. It really is not. And going back to your first caller, Ed, he's absolutely 150% incorrect when he says that what happens in the locker room stays in the locker room. Listen, I understand that theory, but what I'm trying to say to Ed and every other coach is this. Understand that every single thing that you do, you're being watched. You're being videoed. You're being watched in the locker room, because if there's something that happens in the, I read a study last night, and the name of the study was, "You're not a good coach if."
Yeah.
And it gave 15 different reasons. And number two on that list was, if you expect your kids in the locker room to never say what you're doing in the locker room. Because, listen, if I'm bullying a kid in the locker room, if I'm being inappropriate in a mental, emotional, or even a physical way, I'm wrong. And you know
well,
what?
Jack, let me intervene here, because I think, just to be fair to Ed, who's obviously been involved.
No, I understand where Ed's coming.
Yeah,
I really do.
What he was saying is, ideally, whatever is said in the locker room should stay there. Ideally, but of course, Ed knows,
yes,
he's been around the game a long time, and you have, I have. We know that doesn't happen. If all of a sudden, especially in today's world, if kids are being harangued and ripped during a halftime speech by the coach, of course, we want that to stay within the locker room, the confines of the four walls, but we know that's going to eventually leak out to the parents.
Exactly. And
that's the problem, because back in the day, when you played for old school coaches, players knew if they didn't perform well or they weren't doing their job, that they would incur the wrath of their coach at halftime. But the parents, nobody said anything. The kids didn't go home and complain to the parents. That's how it was. You didn't play well, the coach.
I know.
So Ed's saying, ideally, and I agree with that, that we want things to stay here, stay within the locker room, but we all know the reality is that doesn't happen. And, of course, many times the parents are outside the locker room these days, and they can hear the coaches yell and scream. So that's a problem
as
well.
I watched a video of Augie Garrido, okay? And here is one of the winningest baseball coaches in NCAA history.
Right.
And I watched one of his episodes in his locker room after a loss in a playoff game. And it was ferocious. It was the worst thing I've ever watched. But at the end, he turned it completely around, and he took full blame for everything that happened, all the errors, that not training the kids right, not making them understand what they had to do. And once again, I agree with what you just said about the locker room, and Ed, I apologize, but I meant it in a way that you got to understand that everything that you're doing today, you're being watched.
Yes.
And I've hit both. I was a crazy coach at the beginning of my career, but once again, never reprimanded a kid, never singled a kid out. If I had to do that, it was one-on-one in the coach's room, talking to them in a calm manner. But your kids, if they respect you and they trust you, they will understand that there's a big difference between you being mean you being not a good person, you being a bully, and you being passionate. And you know what? Most of the yelling that I did was in passion. I was passionate about the game. I was in I was passionate about my kids. And, you know, and I built the trust in all my 40 years of coaching. And I just, like you said last week, I just took on a new, you know, a new part of my life in coaching at the college level. And there's a different attitude that has to be taken with coaching, you know, the older athletes, the older girls. So I understand, Ed, I apologize for what I said, but what I meant is it shouldn't be kept quiet, you know?
Jack,
what you say in that locker room, everybody should hear.
I hear you. So. And, Jack, as always, thank you for your thoughts. You know, and it's funny, you know, I was going to say, Casey Stengel, the great, great legendary baseball manager, this goes along with what Jack was just saying and Ed as well. It was observed when Casey was running ball clubs, he would always be very tough on his teams when they were on a winning streak. He would make them get out to the ballpark early for more practice. He would focus even more on the details of their game, things they screwed up on, because when they weren't going well, when they were losing, he would leave his team alone because his attitude was, if the team is going good and they're winning, the players are going to be more open to constructive criticism and to suggestions from the coaching staff. But when they aren't playing well, they're going to be more defensive and not so much open to that kind of feedback. And there's a lot of truth in all that. You know, if your team is doing well, you might be easier to address them and get them, you know, burn their butts a little bit to play harder to do things because obviously they think they're good already. Well, yeah, now it's time to push them even more. And when they go into a losing slump or a bad streak, back off a bit. Give them some time to regroup and to figure things out for themselves. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, and I think that's the kind of reason why, you know, Casey Stengel is a Hall of Fame manager. He knew how to take the temperature of the team and knew when to press down the accelerator, and he knew when to back off. And I think that's something, again, coaches have to understand these days. When you come onto a field, all your athletes, all your players, they are listening to you. They're trying to read your body language. They're trying to get a sense of where you're coming from. And, yeah, that's why I think there is some truth in the study that the team is up by 10 points. Coach is going to lean on it even harder at halftime to try to get you play even better. And there is something to that. Again, you got to pick and choose very carefully. You got to plot out very carefully how you're going to do this. But there is something to be said about this so-called old-school coaching mentality. All right, let me take a break. When I return, I promise I'll go right back to your calls. Stay with me.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
And back here on the Sports Edge, a couple of important programming notes that I want to share with you. First of all, Ed Randall will be here, of course, at 9 o'clock. He'll be talking baseball on this Labor Day weekend. But starting next week, the Sports Edge, well, we start at our usual 8 a.m. time, but next week's show will only be 30 minutes long. That's because the fan is introducing a new show called The Morning Line, and that'll start at 8:30 next Sunday, which then leads into the NFL Sunday show. And then in 2 weeks, on September 15th, the Sports Edge goes back to being an hour long in length, but we'll begin at a new start time. We start at 7:30 and we go to 8:30. And the Sports Edge will remain from 7:30 to 8:30 for the next 6 months, right through the football season. And at the end of the football season, we go back to an 8 to 9 start. Again, starting on September 15th, we begin the show at 7:30. Right now, we're talking about coaches at halftime. This new study, it says that coaches do raise their voice to a certain level at halftime with their kids. They'll get them to play better in the second half up until a certain point. This sort of old school approach, we're getting a sense whether you think this works, particularly in this day and age with kids and their parents' involvement and so on and so forth. We're taking your calls at 1-877-337-6666. Let's continue. Let's go to Sal over in Brooklyn. Sal, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning. What's going on?
Hey, Sal.
All right. I was an athlete, and back in the days, I'm 45 years old, and I used to love when my coach got in my face and told me what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah.
Because you're practicing all week, and he's trying to remind you got to pay attention. But at the same time, when you made a good play, he would come over and, you know, get in your face, good job. So you got to play both sides. You understand?
Sal.
You got to make them know that you appreciate what they're doing, but when you're doing bad, I'm going to get in your face, and you got to wake up.
Sal, I'm telling you, there's a certain percentage of the population, and it's not small, that says the same thing, that I really liked when my coaches, you know, rode my butt and got my face, because, A, it showed that they were paying attention to me, and, B, they were trying to get me better.
Yeah, they're preparing you for life. Well, any job you do, you got to pay attention.
It doesn't work that way these days. Most coaches will not cross that line to single a player out, and to a certain extent, that may be a shortcoming. But the smart coaches know, they know their players individually, and they know their players' personality, and they know that certain kids will respond to that kind of push all the time. Other kids, as you know, Sal, they'll wilt. They don't want to be criticized.
I understand that. But then they're not going to be part of a team later on in life, because you got to be able to take insults. You understand?
I hear
you. Like one thing with Nick Saban, he does take it too far. Nick Saban, like, he works those kids. Like, at the end of the game, he can smile to show them like they're doing a good job or go over to the kids. He's just too strict all the time.
Not his style. Saban doesn't do that. And you know, I was thinking about Vince Lombardi. Again, he's long gone, but Vince Lombardi, everybody used to say, oh, he's a real tough guy and mean and so on and so forth, but he knew how to push the buttons of each one of his players. He treated all of his teammates, and Sal, thank you for the call. You know, Lombardi was always universally tough with his entire team, but he also knew how to, basically, as I said, get to know each player individually. He knew which guys would respond to a harsh treatment and which guys he would back off and just give him a pat in the back. That is coaching. That's what made Vince Lombardi so great and so beloved and so well-respected. Let's move on. Let's go to Ed over in Ortley Beach, New Jersey. Ed, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick.
Yes, Ed.
Great topic. Yes, can you hear me?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
All right, great topic. I disagree with Sal. I mean, no one deserves to be insulted. You know, this is not – you don't insult anybody. I'm a coach. I also disagree that this is an old school approach.
Yeah.
I think in today's, I'm a coach and I want an open locker room, but I also want the parents to understand that, you know, their role of their communication needs to go through their child and also through the coach. They can't say anything to the coach that we wouldn't want to communicate back to the child. And I think that is a major part that parents hide behind. I also think that this, when we label this old school, it's the age-old question. I think probably the study is taking into account is what is negative tone or what is negative verbiage.
Uh-huh.
I want to turn around and tell you, a parent, and I know that the desensitized part of society is going to use, if I use the word push, I want to push your child as far as I can, and then I see, because I want them to reach their potential. I use the word push.
Yep.
That probably comes across as negative. Okay, I don't want to be satisfied. The Casey Stengel approach is when the fine line between winning or getting success out of your players or your teammates and getting a little lax, that's the time to step on the pedal.
Right.
And I think that is the push approach. You know, I'm a coach. I come from an immediate family with a bunch of professional athletes. A lot of collegiate athletes, Hall of Famers in their appropriate schools. And we had a makeshift gym in our basement, and we had taped to the ceiling, never be satisfied. That sounds negative, but it's not, because we understood and we were loved up by our parents to understand the grasp that we want you to reach your potential. Shoot for the stars. That's a positive approach. But the second you become lax, you know, someone else is out there outworking you. And I think in today's day and age, coaches need to know that that's the new school approach. That's the new school. The kids still want to be pushed.
Well, Ed,
these kids are...
You make a good point there, and I think that's something I want to focus on. The term push, you know, depending on who you are, some kids, some parents will say, well, there's a connotation to the word push, which is negative, that I have to somehow get in your kid's face and push them because they're not making the effort. On the other hand, push is a positive connotation, like you're working your tail off. I know you have potential. Let me push you to the next level because you can get to that next level. And that's good. And I you know, in today's age, and you know this, Ed, you know, coaches have to walk a very, very fine line because parents don't always necessarily know what these terms mean. They don't know what when a coach says, I want to push your kid, a parent might say, oh gosh, don't push my kid. My kid is a soft, you know, kind soul. If you push them, they'll fold up and go away. No, no. We're trying to get your kid to reach their potential and go farther. So I think this is a concern. And of course, you also know, you know, sometimes coaches, you mentioned about insulting kids. Sometimes coaches use sarcasm, which is never a good tool to use to basically elevate a kid or to get them to play harder. But again, I do think there's this general misunderstanding, miscommunication of terms that are used routinely with coaches that a lot of parents who aren't involved in sports don't understand what these terms mean.
Yeah, and I believe the job and role of a coach is we're bottling it up, and that's why I don't think it's old school. It's the same. It's the age-old push, grind. Use whatever word, and don't be afraid to use whatever word without insulting, without using sarcasm, and that's the quality of quality coaches out there.
Yes.
Is I'm going to use a word that relates, and the new school approach is, it's not a new school approach. How can I relate to the new player, to the player, to the kid, to the 15, 16, 17, if we're talking about high school ages or younger, let's use their verbiage. It doesn't mean you have to waver from what you know what works. If that's old school, then call me old school. But a good coach is going to be able to communicate, to relate, so that if it's a word, say, don't use the word push, use a different word, but we're getting to the same goal. All right, well, that is the old school, new school. Have an open locker room and set parameters, and I believe everybody is going to be much happier. That's the approach, and I think it's a healthy approach. But if the second that we take the foot off the pedal,
yep,
and that, I believe, ties into your study, the second the foot comes off the pedal is when you are going to falter. That's why we're probably seeing that when you're leading in a game, or you see that the tides could change and the momentum. This is sport. That's sport. How many times have you been around it long enough? You're going to see that, man, I don't want to get bit in the rear end here because when things are going good, let's keep on pushing. Let's
yes.
see if we can reach our potential.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
Sorry. I agree with you 100% that, let's say it's your again, the study was focused on high school or college basketball. Your team is up by 10 points. Let's say it's a big upset. Your team is playing great in the first half. You're the coach. Come on, guys. We want you to play even harder the second half because you're on to something really special here. Is that pushing the kids? Yes, but it's pushing them in a positive way. And you know, kids will respond. They can see that, yes, the coach believes in us and wants us to play harder, and we'll do this. It's just a different kind of mindset, which I do fear that I think today's too many sports parents today don't understand what the coach is trying to accomplish to the betterment of their kids. So, Ed, thank you for the call. I appreciate your comments very much, and I think you obviously, with your wealth of experience, clearly you know what you're talking about. And, you know, I think this is exactly what we're talking about. This is an issue that isn't often explained to parents by coaches or athletic directors, that the mentality, the approach, we're trying to get your child to reach his or her potential, and if we can, to get them to a higher level. And I think that's something that unfortunately is sometimes overlooked when it comes to the so-called parental coaches friction at the high school level. Let's go on to White Plains. Matt is standing by. Hey, Matt, you're on the Fan.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Matt.
So great conversation. I'm in the car. I had to call in. So quick background. 4 years I played at Manhattan College, locally here in the Bronx. I was a center fielder. I started all 4 years.
Yep.
And I played 2 seasons of independent ball. I was undrafted. And then once I stopped playing at 23, 24, I went into coaching, obviously. It's, you know, stay involved in the game. So a couple things. First, let me just tell you a story, quick story. I was coaching a team this spring, okay? And we had a kid on the mound, and it was bases loaded and one out, okay? So, and it was a tie game. It was third or fourth inning, whatever, okay? 14 and 15-year-old kids. So I told the pitcher, I said to the kid, I said, listen, go from the stretch. I don't want you going from the windup, okay, because, you know, we need to cut this runoff, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So the kid kind of gives me a hard time, you know, gets back on the mound, goes from the stretch.
Yeah.
Next pitch, it's a hard ground ball right back up the middle. A catchable ball. It deflects off his glove. Everybody's safe. The run advances. The run score. Yeah. This kid screams out, "I told you I should have went from the windup." So, yeah, exactly. So I'm standing on the bench, and now this kid has given me problems all year. He's a good kid. I liked all my kids, okay? But he was a problem. And, you know, he was a good player. He thought he was better than what he was. And I laid into this kid, okay? I did. I laid in. Didn't curse, but I laid into him. And yep. I got parents sitting 8 feet from the dugout, which is ridiculous. I hate that, but they do, okay? The next day, I get a phone call from my quote-unquote boss, okay, and he let me go. I had 2 or 3 weeks left in the season. He owed me about $1,500, and he let me go, okay? And I just left. And that's a story. What we've done here, Rick, is a couple things, and I'll finish. Number one, these kids, I'm telling you, I'm only 37 years old. I'm not 60, saying back in my day, okay?
Yeah,
I'm not.
Uh-huh.
But they have drained, and by they, I mean schools, administrators, parents. They have drained the competitive spirit from youngsters today. They don't want altercation. They don't want confrontation. Everything is just, you know, rainbows and butterflies with these kids. I'm telling you, that's part of the problem. And yet a guy like me who's passionate, loves the game, wants to coach it the way he knows how to coach it, sometimes these people look at you like you're nuts.
Yeah.
Okay? That's number one. And lastly, number two, listen, Rick, I got 2 sisters. I got a wife. I got a mom. I got a grandma. I got 2 nieces. One's my goddaughter. We all love women, okay?
Yeah.
But we've allowed women to infiltrate every single sport, thus making these sports, Rick, soft. Every single sport, basketball, flagrant foul if you touch the guy in the head, okay? Baseball, you can't make any contact anymore with anybody. Can't say anything.
Matt, let me
see with the umpire.
Let me stop you there, and I will tell you this. I was listening to your story. I do not agree with your stuff about women in sports. That's just silly. I mean, Title IX has been one of the best things that's ever happened to sports in this country over 40 years ago. And I think, I just think it's great. I love the fact that, my daughters could play sports in high school and college. And, you know, I think that's wonderful. So forget that. As far as Matt's point about the fact that kids today, we've raised a bunch of situation where kids, and he said, kids today don't want confrontation. Well, you know, the fact is sports is all about disappointment and adversity, and the coaches and the parents have to basically school their kids on how to cope with when things don't go well or there is adversity, because that's really where the character essence comes into play. I obviously didn't know what happened. I wasn't there what Matt was talking about, but for a pitcher to confront a coach about being the cause or reason why things didn't work out well, that's a little bizarre to say the least. And again, it is symptomatic, unfortunately, of where we are today in sports. Kids have to know how to deal with things that don't go well, and coaches have to be able to know how to step up accordingly with their players. All right, let me take a short time out. I'll return with some more comments. Stay with me. Hey, unfortunately, I ran out of time this morning. Pretty interesting topic, to be sure. And, of course, we'll come back and revisit that down the road. My thanks this morning to Matt Casey. Please stick around for Ed Randall. See you next week right here on The Sports Edge.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.